Before we get to today's show, I'd like to hear from you. This show is nothing without our listeners, and we want to make sure we provide you with what you're looking for. Our mailbox is open to all suggestions. So if you have a topic you want to learn about or a guest you want to hear from, let us know by sending us an email to jagahealthandwellness@gmail.com. That's jagahealthandwellness@gmail.com. Now, enjoy the episode. As the world gets louder and louder, the lessons of our natural world become harder and harder to hear, but they are still available to those who know where to listen. I'm Jerry Ouellette, and I was honored to serve as Ontario's Minister of Natural Resources. However, my journey into the woods didn't come from politics. Rather, it came from my time in the bush and a mushroom. In 2015, I was introduced to the birch-hungry fungus known as chaga, a tree conch, with centuries of medicinal applications used by Indigenous peoples all over the globe. After nearly a decade of harvest, use, testimonials, and research, my skepticism has faded to obsession, and I now spend my life dedicated to improving the lives of others through natural means. But that's not what the show's about. My pursuit of this strange mushroom and my passion for the outdoors has brought me to the places and around the people that are shaped by our natural world. On Outdoor Journal Radio's Under the Canopy podcast, I'm going to take you along with me to see the places, meet the people that will help you find your outdoor passion and help you live a life close to nature and under the canopy. All right. Way to go, Garrett. You're back and great to talk about different stuff. And it's that time of year for different stuff. But hey, before we get to that, you were in Calgary just recently. And yesterday, what did they have yesterday in Calgary?
They got another 3 centimeters of snow yesterday. And it's plus, what, 19 here or something like that?
And yeah, we happened to go play 9 holes of golf yesterday. But you flew back just for the golf, I guess, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah. So, and then so it's too cold to start work in Saskatchewan where your next job is. What's going on there? Like, just kind of give us a bit of a rundown.
Yeah. So they have a camp job out there. It's a potash mine and they're just starting. So they're like still excavating the ground kind of thing. So because the ground's still frozen, there's still snow or calling for winter conditions, we can't start our work yet. Because we're not necessarily the first steps, but we're like the second or third steps, depending on the building process and how you look at it.
Okay. So, and you do all the concrete steel rebar work, right?
Yeah. So as soon as they excavate and get out of the ground and then they start forming up forms, stuff like that, then we do the rebar work. So we're probably, like I said, the third or fourth step in the process there for building.
Okay. So, and then, but you don't have no idea when that'll start. As soon as the weather starts to cooperate, then you'll be heading out to Saskatchewan, working a camp job there?
Yeah. So, like, my name's on the list. I spoke to the manager there for the company that does the rebar work, and we should be out there fairly soon. He said, you know, my name's on the list. It's just waiting for the weather to break kind of thing, and yeah, I'll be heading out there. I would probably think, judging by the weather, maybe end of April, maybe into the next month there.
So, yeah. And so just so people haven't heard that, didn't hear us before, a camp job is essentially how long are you there for? How often do you work and how, when you get your time off and how does that work? Just kind of explain what a camp job is for stuff like this.
Yeah. So camp job is, they provide your living, housing, food conditions, and all that kind of stuff there. The last one I was on was in BC and it was a 3-in-1 rotation, which means 3 weeks on, 1 week off. This camp is a 2 week on, 1 week off. So it's a 2-in-1, which is, it's better because you get more of a social life kind of thing. Cause when you're out there for pretty much 3 weeks, it pretty much feels like a month you've missed at home kind of thing. And then, like I said, camp jobs, they usually.
Right. So, and when you're there, when you say 2 weeks, Go ahead. You're saying about camp jobs?
Like the camp jobs there. It's so they provide all your transportation as well. So flights, accommodations, travel to and from the camp. I believe, I'm not too sure if we're landing out of Saskatoon or Regina, and then it's about a 2-hour drive, I think. So I'm pretty sure they would bus us in.
Tell us a bit about, so you're in this camp and it's what, 14 days straight, and you're working every single day for 14, and then you get a week off, and then they fly you in and out, right?
Yeah, that's correct. So like it's 14 days straight, so you're working Saturday, Sunday as well. The hours are probably expected to be 10-hour days, but depending if they want to push, I have done 12-hour days before. So you could go anywhere from 12 hours on average every single day for 2 weeks straight.
And then what kind of life do you have afterwards, or what do you get to do after the 10 hours a day? Because that's pretty long days, especially when you're hauling rebar and working with concrete and things like that.
Yeah, so your social life, like usually at the place you stay, it's kind of like a hotel kind of a setup, but definitely downgraded from a hotel, a little bit closer to like a hotel vibe than a motel in comparison. Usually they'll have like a gym or an activity room, so there's a couple pool tables or ping pong tables kind of thing. But a lot of the times people just want to get out of camps, and sometimes they'll offer a shuttle service to, depending if you're close to a city or something like that, if you want to go into town and get, you know, not camp food, which is more or less just your very, like, very standard potatoes, vegetables, and your main course of whatever meat they're serving that day kind of thing, or salad or something like that as well. But you're kind of dependent on coworkers that are local. So if you really want to get out and kind of go to like a river or a lake kind of thing, go get some fresh air, you're kind of dependent on coworkers who have vehicles out there to drive you to these spots or rivers. Like when I was in BC, we had a few locals up there, and they had vehicles, which was nice because I got to go fishing on the rivers out there. So,
oh yeah, and hope to do the same in Saskatchewan once the rivers open up and the seasons open, right?
Yeah, and they got good walleye fishing up there, so I've been told, but I haven't experienced it yet.
So you have to wait to get there to find that out. So it might be a few weeks before you get a chance to get in there just yet, or pretty soon, sometime in May.
I would think so, yeah.
And then how long is that job expected to run for? What's the time frame? Like how is it 6 months? Is it
this job is supposed to last around 8 years. It could be 8 years of rebar, or it could be 5 years.
8 years.
But they're estimated between 5 to 8 years. And then it could be a lot more for finishing touches. But for my part of the job, it's estimated to be about an 8-year project.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yep.
Whatever you do, I hope mom doesn't listen to this podcast. For 8 years is a long time.
Yeah.
To be away.
Yes, it is.
But it's a different time of year now. So maple sap is done running, and walnuts done, I see. But I saw some stuff today where they were tapping birch trees somewhere. I think it was in Manitoba, because everywhere runs a little bit different. I'm not sure here. I know birch is supposed to run a different later than sap. So birch runs at a different time of year than the maple sap, and it's supposed to run later. But I know when we tried tapping birch trees before, it ran pretty close to the end of when maple was running, and you get a very different sap from that. And now we're cleanup now from all the maple sap pails and all that kind of stuff, because the trout lilies are up, and the ramps or wild leeks are starting to be out everywhere. And now we got to get to the pails and cleaning and decontaminating and sterilizing everything and put it all away for next year, so it's all set and ready to go, right?
Yep.
Yeah, it's surprising how later on in the year you get that kind of white sap. There's a bit of a white in it that I spoke to Jeff, who did the first podcast taping with us on maple syrup, and he was telling me that those were proteins in there in the sap, and it was okay when it's like that to boil it away. But at the end of the season, we kind of packed up and said, that's it, and time to clean up and move on. But we're into something a little bit different this time of year now. Now, what I'd like you to do is sitting with you there, You've got a bottle.
Yep.
I want you to try the bottle and tell us what it tastes like to you.
Right here. It's definitely got like a tropical vibe flavor to it. I see there's a spruce sprigs in the water.
Kind of a citrusy kind.
Oh, I was gonna say that's almost like a tropical flavor here. Like if you were to go to one of those convenience stores that sell these tropical energy drinks or those tropical juices kind of thing, it's very similar to that, except it's more of a watered down version. But you can definitely get that undertone flavor of the citrus in there for sure.
Yeah, well, so that's what we want to talk about today. It's that time of year when the spruce tips or spruce sprigs or spruce buds are out and people can harvest them and use them for different things. Now, first thing is the various type of trees, spruce trees that people use, right?
Yep.
And we've used a number of different ones where we've used a blue spruce, a white spruce, and a black spruce. And what you do is when the new growth starts coming on the spruce trees, they come out at the end of the tips of the boughs, and essentially they're a very, very different color, almost as opposed to that heavy dark green, they're kind of a very light green in color, right?
Yeah, like they're very soft too when you first grab them, feel them though. They're not very firmed up yet.
Yeah, the spruce needles are very stiff when they're there, but the new ones are very, very soft. And actually, you can actually take those and eat those straight off the tree, which have a very, very unique and very much stronger. So the spruce sprigs that you're trying now, I harvested those last year and put them in the freezer so that they would be able to be used for some of the lectures that we do, and we take them out and put them in water as I did with that one that you just had. So what I do is I take a bunch of those spruce needles and sprigs, put it in water overnight, and the water absorbs all the nutrients out of the spruce. And you've got quite a few different ones that you can use or effectively try and get some different flavors or different methods of using it. Now, spruce essentially is very high in vitamin C, and you can have it fresh, frozen, or even dried. And those ones there were in the freezer for a year that you're having. And according to Calico and Twine, not only that, but has contains vitamin A and vitamin E as well. And a lot of people would use a lot of the spruce stuff for coughs or colds because it soothes the sore throats. It's known to be antifungal, antimicrobial, and an antiseptic as well. Plus, it's according to a number of different sources, like what is that? NutriPlanet. They talk about it having a very high, as well as Calico and Twine talking about having high magnesium and potassium in it. So those individuals who are seeking a magnesium and potassium, this is a good source of it as well.
I was going to say, I've heard stories but old folk tales kind of thing, that this is something that they originally cured scurvy with back in the day when first settlers were first coming to North America.
Yeah, when the Europeans came, this was one of the things that we used because of the high vitamin C. It was vitamin scurvy, the vitamin C deficiency, and people would use this and just make basically a tea out of it, or they could consume it straight. But some of the stuff is it where you harvest from. You got to make sure, because not all spruce are tips are edible. You got to watch, the black, the white, and the blue are fine, but we import a lot of decorative trees as well. And you just got to make sure. And if you're not sure, then the best thing is to stay away from it, right?
I understand.
Yeah. And so you got to identify and make sure it's a spruce tree, because a lot of people, I recall one person, he was giving out, they were pines. And I told him, I said, oh, he says, I gave out a couple thousand pine tree saplings. Or he said, spruce tree saplings. I said, Frank, those are pine. He said, no, that's spruce. I said, Frank, those are pine. He said, no, long needles pine, short needles spruce. Those are long needles. And actually, like, I believe it was a red pine tree that he was giving everybody. And he had bought them from a nursery and was absolutely convinced that they were spruce trees, which they were not. So you got to make sure that what you're getting is a spruce tree to be able to do it in the first place.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Right?
Yep.
Yep. So some of the things with it as well then. Now, what you can do is, and there are people that use it very much like rosemary. So rosemary has these little needles on it that people bake and cook with. And you can put these spruce needles from the sprigs, which are the small shoots. And they suggest that you take the spruce shoots from the lower parts of the tree, but don't take any more than 10%. Otherwise, it'll take away from the tree's growth. And you want to make sure that it continues to grow without any problems. And some of the other things that need to be done with it is that it has to stay away from areas where, like roadways and things like that, where you're going to get all kind of contaminants and things like that on the road, or all the stuff that they spray on the roads for salt and to make sure that it keeps the ice down. Not only that, but in some of the areas where they spray a lot of chemical use, you want to stay away from, because a lot of these trees will absorb a lot of that stuff. So fresh ones in growth areas that doesn't have any problems, or areas that have high potential of contamination, are what to look for.
I was going to say, a lot of the information that you get out there, you're from talking to like people that snowplow stuff like that, is that the splash radius goes pretty far on the side of the streets and roadways. So you definitely don't want to harvest the trees immediately off the side of the roads there, for sure. Even when I was working at Lowe's in the garden centers, they would talk about the burlap sacks going around the shrubbery, stuff like that. Salt was still penetrating through them just because of how close they were to the roadway sometimes.
Yeah, and you see a lot of the shrubs that are wrapped in canvas through the wintertime, and that's in order to stop that spray from going on and killing a lot of the plants. But you got to watch, because a lot of those things will absorb it through the roots and then put it back down into the sprigs and things like that. So the advice is to harvest from the lower branches. The new sprigs are very soft, kind of like a lime green kind of color, very light and very, very soft. And quite frankly, you can take them right off the tree. And I remember I was with Pastor Calvin, and I said, here, try this. So I reached over and I grabbed a couple of sprigs and I handed it to him. And he looks at me and he says, what am I, a moose? And he said, no, try it. And he tried it and he was like, I can't believe that. That is shocking. But there's a lot of other things that can be done with it. Like some people will put it in their smoothies or salads and grind them up, or of course use them in a tea, use the dried tips in making a tea, which can help with a lot of respiratory issues and soothe sore throats and things like that. But also you can bake with it, or as I did there, but it didn't soak because I just put those in last night in that water bottle for you. So I take a couple of the sprigs and I'll throw, say, three or four into a standard water bottle and leave it for a couple of days, and then it has a really, really sharp flavor that you basically just kind of touched on there, because I only put them in last night. And now it's time for another testimonial for Chaga Health and Wellness. Okay, we've got Rob from Hamilton here, who's had some success with the Chaga cream. Rob, can you tell us about it?
Yeah, I've used it on blemishes, cuts, just basically all around healing. Anything kind of blemish, it speeds it up really quick.
Great.
It speeds the healing process really well, and leaves no marks and doesn't stain or smells okay.
Okay, thanks, Rob. Appreciate that.
You're welcome.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special offer from Chaga Health and Wellness. If you've listened this far and you're still wondering about this strange mushroom that I keep talking about and whether you would benefit from it or not, I may have something of interest to you. To thank you for listening to the show, I'm going to make trying Chaga that much easier by giving you $1 off all our Chaga products at checkout. All you have to do is head over to our website, chagahealthandwellness.com, place a few items in the cart, and check out with the code CANOPY, C-A-N-O-P-Y. If you're new to Chaga, I'd highly recommend the regular Chaga tea. This comes with 15 tea bags per package, and each bag gives you around 5 or 6 cups of tea. Hey, thanks for listening. Back to the episode. Okay, Garrett, you've got a jar there with you there. And I want you to open the jar, and I actually have a popsicle stick kind of thing there. And I want you to try what's inside the jar. Now, this is something rather unique. It's very dark. And maybe you could even, after you try it. All right, let's see. I can see you. Have you got some? Okay.
All right, so I'm trying. I see it's very dark and very thick, like first impressions before tasting. It's almost like a caramel thickness, but like not like one of those squeeze ball ones, like the one you make at home.
Right. So very, very thick. And now that one I made, that batch that you're trying there. Now, how's it taste, first of all, Garrett?
That's very sweet. Like first impressions, you would think it's like a honey that's like a natural honey that's a little bit firmed up and not runny, because a natural honey is very like crystallized kind of thing. You get that impression with your first texture there. But then it's very sweet, but it's got like a twist of flavor, like a tang to it. It's not like a sharp, distinct taste, but it's more of a tang. It's like a lingering kind of taste there, and I'm not too sure what it is.
Right. So what it is, Garrett, is we call it spruce honey. Now, it's very popular in Germany, and our buddy Rolly was the one who showed me how to make this, and that was our first exposure to even trying or looking into using spruce sprigs or buds or spruce tips in making something. And what we did there was, now that jar had been sitting there for 7 years, and it's still good. It has a very unique flavor, but it has all the benefits of the vitamin C and, you know, according to Calico and Twine, the vitamin A and E, and used for sore throats and things like that. And what we did there was we picked an entire pot of spruce sprigs, and we filled the pot right to the top. And when you push down, you can compress them a bit. And then we took the pot, and once it's completely filled with spruce tips or sprigs, we filled it with water. And of course, we use spring water there. And we bring it to a boil for about, well, Rolly said about 20 minutes, but I think we did about 40 minutes. And then we strained out all the spruce sprigs and the spruce needles and all that was inside, and was left with all the liquid from the water. Then what we did was, it takes about, and you can use, what we used was a sugar at that time to make that batch there. So it was about 1 cup of sugar to 1 cup of water. So it's pretty heavy in the sugar. So people who are dealing with diabetes need to watch. But then what you do is you mix the two together and then simmer it, and then take it right down at a simmer load for an extended period of time until it gets to that thickness of like honey, like you just had right there. And you end up with something that lasts years and years and years. And I still have unopened jars. And the one you had was an open jar, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was definitely something was definitely used before. But yeah, like tasting it here, it's like you said, this one's 7 years old. It's still very fresh in taste. I would say it's very like surprisingly, it feels very fresh. Like, I don't feel like this, that staleness, or it's been sat around kind of long. It tastes like something like freshly made kind of experience, for something that would be comparison of like a honey kind of.
Yeah, thing. It has a very much a consistency of honey. And I'll probably bring it in and let them try it here at the studio where we're at. But I left the jar there with you. But you could, effectively, I had some people, because we were providing it for a lot of people, and people were asked, could you use honey or maple syrup instead of sugar? That way you're using natural sugars. And I said, well, we've never tried it that way because we've only made it a couple of times, but it could be something that potentially people could use as opposed to using sugar. And then, like I said, so it's about one cup of the syrup to one cup of the sugar, and then you simmer that, take it right down on basically like a low boil until it gets really, really thick, and then pour it in your jars and seal the jars. And that one there is like 7 years old. But the big thing with that is it has all the benefits of the vitamin C. It can be used as a honey, you know, on bread or for any of the other purposes used, or mix it with water for, you know, making a drink. Because, you know, according to Calico and Twine, it also has antifungal, antimicrobial, and antiseptic aspects as well. And there's quite a few in here that articles I'm referring to that we've done some research on that talk about the fact that it works with free radicals as well and helping eliminating free radicals. And that's because of the antioxidants found in it as well. But one of the other interesting things that was found in with the spruce is there's quite a few of them. When I'm saying quite a few of the articles that we've read that talk about using or finding there's chlorophyll in with a lot of the spruce. And chlorophyll actually is supposed to help carry a lot of oxygen through the body. So when you're using a lot of the spruce honey or the we call it like a spruce tea or an iced tea kind of thing that we had there, the chlorophyll in there helps growing and healing tissue as well as controlling cravings, or the big thing is transporting oxygen to the cells, which is some of the articles that all talk about all that. And I think the biggest one was, what do they call it? NutriPlanet was their articles and focusing on how the chlorophyll had a lot of benefits to it as well. So there's a lot of benefits. It's the time of year coming up when this podcast is out, which is usually May, June kind of thing. And all the areas will differ as to what time of year to harvest, but you'll see the new sprigs. They kind of get this little, when they first start out, they get this little kind of, it's a brown kind of covering on it, much like for those people that pick fiddleheads, you get that brown inside the fiddlehead. You take that off and it opens it up. And once it opens up, you can eat them raw. You can put them in water, or you can freeze them, or you can cook with them or bake with them as you would with a lot of other things. I see recipes in here and that people actually use them in smoothies as well by putting them through their machines to break them down and put it in a smoothie and get the benefits there. And it has a very unique and special flavor. The other way is, and we've got quite a few bags frozen in the freezer that they'll last a long time and can I use at later dates. And certainly I know last year when I was at the International Center in Toronto doing a seminar with it, I provided all kind of people with little samples to try, and people were quite surprised at the taste and the benefits that they were getting from small things such as spruce sprigs. All right, Garrett. Well, I think that's what we want to talk about for now. We should get out there because the leeks are coming up, the trout lilies are up, and the spruce sprigs should be out very shortly. And we're going to check and see how big the bulbs are on the wild leeks, or ramps as they call. And then we're going to be talking on another podcast about ramps or wild leeks. Thanks for being on the show again, Garrett.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Always a pleasure here, and glad I'm able to provide some assistance there for you.
Sounds good, Garrett. It's just another way to enjoy things and partake in those rare things that not many people think about out there under the canopy.
Hi, everybody. I'm Angelo Viola.
And I'm Pete Bowman.
Now, you might know us as the hosts of Canada's favorite fishing show, but now we're hosting a podcast.
That's right. Every Thursday, Ange and I will be right here in your ears, bringing you a brand new episode of Outdoor Journal Radio.
Now, what are we going to talk about for 2 hours every week?
Well, you know there's going to be a lot of fishing.
I knew exactly where those fish were going to be and how to catch them, and they were easy to catch.
Yeah, but it's not just a fishing show. We're going to be talking to people from all facets of the outdoors, from athletes.
All the other guys would go golfing. Me and Garth and Turk and all the Russians would go fishing.
To scientists.
But now that we're reforesting and letting things free, it's the perfect transmission environment for Lyme disease.
To chefs.
If any game isn't cooked properly,
marinated,
or you will taste it.
And whoever else will pick up the phone.
Wherever you are, Outdoor Journal Radio seeks to answer the questions and tell the stories of all those who enjoy being outside.
Find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
How did a small-town sheet metal mechanic come to build one of Canada's most iconic fishing lodges? I'm your host, Steve Nidzwicki, and you'll find out about that and a whole lot more on the Outdoor Journal Radio Network's newest podcast, Diaries of a Lodge Owner. But this podcast will be more than that. Every week on Diaries of a Lodge Owner, I'm going to introduce you to a ton of great people, share their stories of our trials, tribulations, and inspirations. Learn and have plenty of laughs along the way.
Meanwhile, we're sitting there bobbing along trying to figure out how to catch a bass. And we both decided one day we were going to be on television doing a fishing show.
My hands get sore a little bit when I'm reeling in all those bass in the summertime, but that's might be for more fishing than it was punching.
You so confidently you said, "Hey, Pat, have you ever eaten a drum?"
Find Diaries of a Lodge Owner now on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.